Welcome to Electronically Yours with Martin Ware.
Hi, it's Martin here, Electronically Yours, as always. I'm doing something a little bit unusual this week in my intro. I'm actually going to record the intro and the outro before I've talked to my guest. And the reason for that is because it's Andy Bell, who's a very good old friend of mine. And it's not like I need to interview him to know what he's like or what his history is, because we are very close friends. So I'm just going to fill you in a little bit with some of the stuff we're going to be talking about in the future tense, coming up in a minute, about his history of growing up in a big family with six children. He was the eldest of six children. So I've actually met his family. They're completely mad. They're lovely, but mad. From Peterborough, and obviously we're going to be talking to him about how he met Vince, and you know, the stuff that he's very famous for is obviously he's sold loads and loads of records and had been one of the first proper openly gay pop stars, LGBT pop stars, for a long time now, and that takes a lot of guts, and I've got a lot of admiration for him. And even people like George Michael, who eventually came out, you know, it was really because he was under pressure to come out. Andy and they both did a lot of good work for HIV research charities and various other charities. I mean, I think Andy's done stuff for PETA, you know, the animals charity, etc. And we've worked together on lots of things in the past. Of course, I produced I Say, I Say, I Say, the Erasure album. But we also worked together on, you probably don't know this, but you'll find out about it in the interview, on a piece at the Royal Opera House together, and also on the third BEF album, where he performed the Kate Bush song Breathing. And we're going to talk about all that stuff. And I love Andy so much. He's like one of those angels that come down from heaven. So is Vince. They're just beautiful, lovely, humanist people, full of empathy, full of love, and therefore, ultimately, full of happiness. I am incredibly grateful to have both Andy and Vince as good friends. Here he is, the one and only Andy Bell.
Hello.
Oh, I like the beard.
Hello. Are you all right?
I'm all right, mate.
You like my white beard? It matches my pink eye look here.
Oh, no. What's happening there?
No, it's like an infection, but I haven't been able to get to the doctor, but I've used the, you know, the antibiotic cream on there.
Yeah. I always get mixed up between that and Anusol.
Oh yeah,
that's where the problems start.
That's probably why. Yeah, that's probably. Yeah.
No, seriously.
that's the trick that they get from drag queens. They supposedly, from according to Lily Savage, you put it under your eyes and it tightens them up and makes you look younger.
Thank you for that. It's not quite. Household tips with good morning, is it? You've got all the hair that I need to have.
Oh, I'll wish you some.
How are you keeping? You good?
I'm fine, thank you. I think it suits you, Martin, actually. Not having hair.
I'm going for the Dr. Evil look.
You know. Oh, yeah, well, you're not even enough, not yet.
I need a mini-me, though, that's the thing.
You've got to be more evil.
Thank you for doing this, I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And,
in fact, I'm just happy to be talking to you, because I've not seen you for so long.
Yeah,
time. And I get the chance to spend an hour with you, which is great.
Oh,
how often do we get a chance to talk to each other for a solid hour?
Never. How long is it since I've been round to your house? Probably more than 15 years.
Yeah.
because your little girl was like 5 or 6.
Yeah, that's right. She's 20, and 25.
She's gone to university.
And yeah. And all that. You know, my house isn't my house anymore, by the way.
Isn't it? No, I didn't know that. Oh.
No, I'm staying. We just downsized and.
Yeah.
And we're staying in a beautiful penthouse apartment in Marylebone Lane.
A good idea. That's that happened to me years ago with when Paul passed away.
Right.
You know, I sold the house. It was like not worth rattling around in a cage.
That's right.
And you know, did the same thing, downsized, but it's got loads of my stuff's all in boxes still from
that's the problem, isn't it?
Lining the walls.
So what are you up to at the moment?
We are in our last 2 weeks of rehearsals for the New Erasure tour, which is starting on October the 4th. And we start in Glasgow and then work our way down. And then we've been putting off Europe because all the rules changing and stuff. Then we go to the US and we have quite a few dates in January. And that takes us through to, I think, about March time.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, otherwise, apart from that, we've been doing, Vince has made another album, a brand new album from parts from the previous album that we had last year, which was called The Neon. And they had one album this year that was called The Neon Remix. Now he's made this other one from
three for one,
like Dusty Bin. Yeah.
You should have called it Upcycling. That'd be...
exactly what it is. You know, he like, I was quite, actually, not, I wouldn't say shocked, but really strangely amazed by how he kind of took, he said it was loads and loads essences of my voice, you know, just like from the backing vocals and things like that, and then used them as synths and kind of played the made brand new track from them. So it's kind of it's very ambient, and then and then with me singing on the top again, you know, to something new.
Wow.
So I hardly recognized, you know, there were only probably one song or two songs that I recognized where the chants came from, you know, but otherwise,
how amazing.
Yeah,
has he done it on his own? Who's produced it with him? Anybody?
He did it on his own. Yeah, it's not. He actually mixed it as well. He mixed it, and then, of course, his version was, I mean, really beautiful. You know, it's been it took him quite a long time to do. You know what he's like. He's gets completely focused, and so there were a couple of tracks where I thought, oh, the story's gone away. You know, because I kind of told a story. I felt like I was telling a story on the mic. I said, oh, the story's gone. Where's it gone? You know, Gareth Jones and I went into Strong Room and did four tracks with what I thought, how I thought they should be, you know? So it's a mixture of two. So we're having like, 8 + 2 on one album, and then there'll be 2 tracks spare for something else, you know. Cool. We've been doing, and I've been doing some co-writing as well.
Who is?
Just getting ready. We've been working with Boy George, which I can't believe for the very first time, like, you know, with in all these years, you know, because I love his writing, I love his and his dance material. And also with The Grid.
Oh, what, Dave Ball? No, not Dave Ball.
Dave Ball.
I'm just doing some stuff with Dave Ball as well.
Are you? Fantastic. Anyway.
I said to him, wouldn't it be great? Because he used to be a Northern Soul DJ.
Oh, I love it, Martin. You know,
and that. I said, I love Northern Soul. You know, I used to go to Northern Soul clubs. And I said, you know, why don't we, you know, the brilliance of Tainted Love?
Yeah.
Why don't we do something that's Northern Soul flavor, but purely electronic? So we're doing that.
Oh, great. That sounds so great. You know, one of my favorite tracks ever It sounds like a B-side, but it's called, it's by the Ronettes, and it's called, what's it called now? Do I Love You? It's brilliant.
How's it go? Go on. Like,
the intro of it, the intro is, dun 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 dun. Do I love you for my baby? Do I love you for my love?
Yes. Well, that's all the samples I need. Thank you very much.
The chorus just goes, whoa, oh, oh. Oh, 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 whoa, whoa.
Brilliant. 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 Look at that. It's a world first. It's an exclusive. Podcast gold.
Oh, no, I honestly think that is one of the best songs ever. You know, for like Northern Soul dancing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Phil.
Wow. Did you ever do any Northern Soul dancing?
I did, yeah. I used to go to the Northern Soul Night in Peterborough. They had one, right. And it was quite weird because they mixed it with electro, so that early electro, you know.
Right.
So it was your stuff. They had the Human League. That's where I first. Well, it's not where I first heard Sparks, but you know, kind of really got into them. The number one song in Heaven. And yeah, but alongside it, they were playing Northern Soul records, which I never
knew.
I know, and it was at the it was at this place called the Irish Club. It was at the Irish Club, which was just across the river, so it's kind of just a little bit outside town. But I saw the B&B was on this B&B called the Dog in the Doublet, and it's right on the river. Just and it was on. Four in a Bed, you know that program, Four in a Bed. And I thought, like, oh,
I love that program.
That pub, like, each Thursday or whatever, or once a month, you know, to this club. And it was just fantastic, you know. And they had, and why I liked it, Martin, apart from the music as well, was you could have a dance off with the men. So it wasn't like, you know, men could dance with men.
Neat.
You know, it wasn't like seen as being like being homoerotic or anything, you know. It was like you weren't coming onto them. It was like a duel.
Well, the Northern Soul thing was like 90% men anyway.
Yeah,
and it was in Sheffield, and
yeah, I love the fashion. Those high waisted
Oxford bags
with the buttons, yeah, and the big. Yeah. Big
I used to have some. Yeah. You won't believe it now because obviously it wouldn't look very good.
Well,
on
I would.
Oh no, I'd need a corset to get into it, but. But it was like 18-button waistband.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right up to here.
Yeah.
Really baggy bags.
Yeah.
Oxford bags.
So they were quite, that was very reminiscent of the old-fashioned sailor uniform.
Like that's
the,
right.
You know, all the whites, you know. So I just thought it was amazing and with a little polo T-shirt as well.
Yeah, no. my mate, who was a fantastic Northern Soul dancer, used to go all around the country, twisted wheel and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was so obsessed with it. He used to take a little bag of sand with him so he could put the sand on the floor so he could do all the things properly.
Make it
lubricate it a bit.
Oh,
that's serious.
Well, those backdrops as well. You know,
God.
Back on one hand and then just like get back up again, you know. Really, that was kind of, I mean, years ahead of breakdancing, wasn't it?
Years ahead.
Yeah.
Based on like James Brown and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I've always just loved that kind of like shuffling across the floor sort of type dancing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
There was like the holding pattern, wasn't there?
Which is like moving the feet
in opposite direction. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they come and break and go back, and they do a backflip.
It was like people kind of like almost let you have your go. And they, as you said, they'd be around the side. So it'd be like in almost some kind of like a bullfight or something, I suppose, you know, where there are, you know, the crowd's around and then all of a sudden somebody else will come in and join in. And,
that's right.
You know, it'd be nice. It was lovely.
A lot of speed.
Yeah, like...
Probably. A lot of speed, a lot of bags, a lot of boxes of 7-inch vinyl, which they used to swap and stuff. That was what a scene.
I never knew who the artists were, though. That was the only thing. It was all, it was so rare, wasn't it? The singles imported, and that was pre 12 inch, wasn't it?
Ian Levine, wasn't it? Who used to go to America and bring back and just absolutely ransack all the kind of cutout stores in Manhattan and bring back all the singles that never sold, right? And bring them back. And if they were not known, they were worth more to him. That was it.
I can't, you know, I get mixed up between Northern Soul and the Philadelphia sound, you know, because it's a bit, they are sort of similar.
That's a bit later, isn't it?
A
bit smoother, less dance-oriented.
If you know anyone, I know there's a house for sale in near Miami that's got this record collection to die for in the basement. Is this really? Serious? I'm serious.
Well, it includes the record collection.
Well, the record collection could be bought separately.
Wow. But
it's amazing, like rock and roll. Honestly, you have not seen anything like it.
Wow.
It's my partner's sister. She's selling the house.
Wow. How many records do you think? Is it vinyl?
I would say, yes. I would say, like, I don't know. I have no idea. 200,000?
No,
I don't know, Martin. I'm just plucking a figure out. Honestly, it's like wall to wall, everywhere you look, more than a record shop. Probably like HMV, Oxford.
You're right. Wow. Okay, so here we are on the Electronically Yours with Martin Ware podcast, and we turn into estate agents. It's fantastic.
And a record seller.
And record sellers and everything. You know, I've not even got onto my notes yet, and we've already covered so much. I want to go back to when you first started, and you had a band called The Void, didn't you?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I was called The Void. That was...
you were called The Void.
It was actually a four-piece band. It was like one of those End of the Garden... dad's bands, you know, it was formed by this dad. He wanted his son to be famous. Apparently they had this gay singer before I joined who, you know, I didn't know. He sounded very nice. His voice was lovely, but he left. And then, you know, we probably were together for about 3 months, this band. Right. And they had some great songs. One was called Telepathy in Slow Motion. They were quite groovy, sort of, and it was kind of electronic-ish, but sort of like edging towards that area, you know. But waited the bass player if he would leave and do a duet with me, you know, a duo. So he did, and he was the bass player. See, I was a splitter right from the very beginning, right?
Oh, splitter.
He left. So I ended up with this bass player who was really brilliant. We used to just like take our references from stuff that was in the charts, like Who's That Girl, the Eurythmics version. Who's that girl with the ice cream? And so we used to do that.
Tacked on some other lyrics on the end.
Yeah, you know, and then like just do these kind of like funky, just like a funky sort of electro bass lines on bass guitar, you see. And then he would kind of play all the instruments, keyboards and everything. But we had some great songs. He wrote some really good songs. And then we started writing together. One of the first songs was called Delusions of Grandeur that he'd written himself. And so we met this manager who was a guy called Pete Gage. Well, it's Pierre met him. And... he used to be with a band called Vinegar Joe.
Oh, I know Vinegar Joe. Yeah.
He went out or was married to Elkie Brooks. And then we made a four-track single, no, one single with the A-side and B-side, printed 1,000 copies.
Right.
And that was it. And then tried to get a deal. You know what it was like in those times. You know, nobody seemed interested. So I thought, well... We'd only done two shows, you know. One was in a Domino's club in Southall, and the other one was in Ealing Park, you know, getting pelted by the builders
with the eggs,
you know. So I thought, well, I need to get serious, and then started looking again in the papers, and then saw the Melody Maker ad, which Vincent.
Now, wait, what was Dinger then?
Sorry, Dinger. That was how I got my ego name to get into the to push myself from Andy Bell. They called me Dinger in school. Ding Dong, you see.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was that a band, Dinger, or that was just your?
It was a band. Right. That was the duo. Yeah, because before that we were called Boima, which was German for tree. So it's a bit too pretentious that way.
Yeah, slightly. Yeah.
Yeah. And even the Void was a bit pretentious.
I like Dinger though. It's good.
Yeah.
So you saw this ad in the Melody Maker, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was, what did the ad say? In fact.
The ad was versatile singer wanted by established songwriter, and that was it. And it was, I always had this feeling. I just thought of all the people that I would love to work with in the charts, or you know, doing pop, would be Vince Clarke, because I thought he was the most left field person. And then one of my flatmates at the time said, because I used to rehearse along to Yaz record, Yazoo Records, and you know, Jimmy Somerville and stuff like that, and he said to me, that's going to be you in a year's time, this guy. And he's he works for Gok Kwan now. and Gok did our makeup for the Breathe video, which was right. Like, so it's amazing how all these things just—it's
true.
Went together, though.
It's very true. So so is it true that the first Erasure album? All right. Yeah. First of all, who came up with the name Erasure?
Erasure. That was one of mine and Paul's names, which just came from Razor Edge, Erasure. But we loved the movie Eraserhead.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it kind of came from that, and you know, and then I was very interested to find out the sounds wrote for the film were all made by banging on a radiator.
Is that right?
The movie, yeah. And I just thought, oh, that's so apt. You know, in some ways, it seems so apt. And I had no idea of the word erasure, because I thought it was a word that you could spin round and so it would be the same backwards kind of thing, you know, but it's not at all.
Hold on, what is it? Erasure.
Erasure.
Yeah.
Palindromic,
that's the word, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's kind of, it's amazing how many times you see the word now. You know, about kind of things being erased and the erasure of so and so and so and so. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's like the cancel culture thing, isn't it?
That's, yes, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of, I feel like we've kind of like reached that point now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And what did you have any other names in the shortlist?
We had the Water Babies. We had Vince Andy or V&A. Can't remember what else was on the list, but it wasn't a very good list or a very long one either. So
yeah, we had some funny ones when we were doing the Human League. We had Monolith.
Yeah,
well, it sounds like a heavy metal band, didn't it?
Yeah.
And the other one that I really liked, which is one of Ian's ideas, was what was it? Wordmasters.
Yeah.
The Wordmasters.
Oh, right. Oh, that's a good one as well.
It's a strange name, anyway. But
that sounds like an online lexicon now, Wordmaster, isn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
So you released the first single, which was, you know, very... Where did that get to in the charts?
I'm not sure if it went in the charts. It was... I'm not sure if that was 87 or if Wonderland was number 87. But it didn't get any airplay or anything. So,
do you ever think that in today's environment,
Yeah.
Were you not with Mute? You'd have probably been dropped.
We'd have been dust. I'd have been dust. And Vince would have gone on and found another singer. So, you know, we were very lucky. And I was kind of like, I just think, oh, God bless you, Vince, you know, for standing by me, because he, you know, he was like a very successful man already, and he didn't need to.
But he needs you.
Yeah.
To complete him.
Yeah. I mean, but I just, you know, he had faith in me, and that was proved by just like driving around the UK in a van and going and playing all the universities and dance clubs and places, you know. And I just thought, wow, you know, it's kind of, because I thought it was going to be like just a pass, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
To fail. And I was really glad, Martin, that we were made to work, because I don't think I would have appreciated it more in my heart. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you have to have some adversity. It's like the Jeopardy moment
in
documentaries, isn't it? You've got to have that.
Even now, you know, even now, I have to remind myself, and I feel so grateful for being able to make music. You know, I know it's kind of anyone can, but it's not all the places in the whole world can.
No, you know? I'm very grateful we grew up in the time we did.
Yeah,
because the environment from record company point of view and from the community point of view was perfect for what we wanted to do. So I'm very grateful as well.
I mean, really, you should, you know, it is true about be careful what you wish for, because me and Vince always used to say music should be free, and now it's like...
fine. Tell that to your accountant.
It's like that. I know.
I know what you mean. But the key point is that you do it because you're passionate about it and because you love it. And I always say, I mean, I teach MA students in songwriting now and all that, and I always say to them, look, more than ever, you've got to love what you do.
Yeah.
Or else, because that's really your payment. And if you get a financial kickback, that's a bonus. But unless you are passionate about what you do, you're just fighting on a losing wicket, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It is strange, you know, it's kind of that thing like, you know, we all love performing as well. And it's, you know, you know, when it comes to like putting a set list forward, you know, you don't want to just do hits.
No.
Even though you've...
Of course, you know, of course.
Done them. You don't just want to do those because it's not a challenge to you.
No, of course. So, and also, the audience need a time when they can go to the bar, don't they? When they're playing the new album.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I'm naughty. I'm sorry. I'm naughty.
You're fine.
No, I agree completely. We always try and change up the set list all the time. Even in the tour, we change songs every night.
Yeah. It's why I can't. You know, I get more and more. I don't like modern technology because it's just every single thing is monetized. Everything.
You know?
Except, you know, and then you have these streaming services that play your records and you don't get paid.
Well, we haven't released anything digitally with Heaven 17 for about 6 years now. The only things we release are vinyl.
Yeah,
that's it. We'd rather go fuck you all. I even get DJs and radio DJs finding contact details for me and going, begging me to play one of the tracks that we've released only on vinyl. Yeah. I said, you can play it, but you've got to destroy it afterwards.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so they can't keep it. And they go, what are you talking about? No. Because as soon as it's in the digital domain, it'll be everywhere, and you get paid nothing for it anyway. So, anyway, I just want to say at this moment in time, how much I love you. Number one.
Oh.
Number two.
Oh.
Not number two. Number two.
Yeah.
This is. You have to watch this at some point. But I've got an amazing, I've never told you this before, but I've got an incredible amount of respect for the amount of stuff you do for charity, and particularly AIDS charities. And you do stuff for Petra as well, don't you? Done that in the past.
Yeah.
And, you know, as being one of the first openly out gay men, not hiding the fact that you're HIV positive, giving inspiration to people to be brave, to be honest and true to themselves, is probably your life's greatest achievement, I think. And, you know, obviously the fact that you're an incredible singer is an amazing thing. But I just thought I'd say that in as honest a way as I possibly could at this point. And I rarely get a chance to say that about you in public.
No. You know?
And I know you would never seek that attention. It's not like you're going for an MBE or anything. I think we've already... That ship has sailed a long time ago. But anyway... It's all right. No, I mean it. And I think a lot of people, you know, part of the a large part of the reason you've had such longevity is because people have enormous respect for you as a person, and also Vince, of course. They tend to think of you in the same way.
Yeah.
But you've got your own career with the solo albums and the, you know, the theatre work that you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a true artist. So... I was going to say it for the end, but I thought I'd better say it.
No, thank you. You know, I love it. And I think it's, as you do, you know, it's kind of very important to do stuff outside of your...
It definitely is.
...main, you know, just to kind of...
It informs you, your work, and cross-fertilizes it and keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
Just want to point out, because I've gone to the trouble of doing all this research, 20 million albums or more, 5 number one albums, 17 top 10 singles in the UK. It's not bad, is it, that? What do you think of the... Oh, I know. What do you think of the ABBA thing?
To be honest, I was not that blown away by the...
No, me neither.
No, I thought they kind of sounded like, you know, to be fair, you know, they're older and stuff like that. But I kind of feel like... that now they're part of this sort of gentleman's club almost, this like of play of musical writers. Do you know what I mean?
Precisely. It sounded like Cats to me, or something.
No. Yeah, like it's kind of it sounds like Mamma Mia 3.
Yes.
And that's no like disrespect.
Well, I know, but listen.
No.
They've got an album's worth, presumably. Yeah. If they're the best examples of that album, I'm not sure.
No,
I'm not sure. I mean, I love them as we all do. Yeah.
I feel the same. I feel the same, Martin. You know,
it's a legacy that shouldn't be tampered with.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, maybe it can teach us something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I would like to be an avatar. I wouldn't like to be an avatar.
It's about making money, mate. That's what it's about.
When I'm dead, I want to be dead. Not just, you know, I don't want to be a ghost floating around all around the world and just singing the song over and over and over.
I don't like it.
I was going to say,
if you're going to do it properly, they should have all the concerts on one night simultaneously.
What, all around the world?
Yeah.
All at once.
Then
it all just that disappears.
Yeah, no, that's it. Boom. I'm off. Thank you. That's my pension. There's those who need it.
No.
So you've done loads of collaborations with people. This isn't a loaded question because we've collaborated.
Yeah.
So exclude me from this.
Yeah.
I was going to say, which I know it's a difficult one to answer, and I'm sure you've enjoyed all of them in different ways, but. Is there anything that you are really particularly proud of?
I loved working on Electric Blue with Manhattan. You know, I loved that. And they were kind of our first natural, organic collaborations with Claudia Brooken.
Yeah, I thought she
did really good work on there, you know. I don't know. I really wasn't thinking about it, you know, and they lived around the corner up in Highgate then. So I would just like wander around of an evening, you know, and like we'd do some writing and stuff. So, and the song that I did with, oh my God, I can't think. Sorry, it went out of my head.
Not Jake Shears, no? No.
Jake, no. Yes, but the other, oh my God, I'm going to get killed. I can't remember it right now.
Let's move on. Come back to it later.
All right.
Okay. We did something at the Royal Opera, didn't we?
So what was that, Han?
We did something at the Royal Opera House. The the on public display thing, and you sang the role of the Petrushka.
Well, I didn't actually sing it, though, did I?
No, you didn't. You did sing it, and we used the recorded version.
But we recorded it, though, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. And people absolutely adored it.
Oh, really? That's
fantastic.
I think because I hadn't done it live.
Yeah.
I have not placed it in my mind. You know what I mean?
That's right. It's like move on.
I'm so ashamed. Honestly.
No. We'll not tell. That's not the reason I brought it up. I was just really happy with it.
Yeah. I haven't heard that for years.
Oh, I've got it recorded somewhere. So I'll dig it out and send it to you. But, you know, I was the one who got the roses thrown at me. Right? That could have been you.
Yeah.
Anyway, but moving on to the third Music of Quality and Distinction album, the version of Breathing.
Breathing.
Was fucking great. I love that.
It was so dark. It was kind much darker than Kate's version, you know, because I mean, I love her, you know, and but I remember because you'd recorded the music already and then sent it to me, and I was over in the US and I just met my new partner, Stephen, and
we were in
Tampa. He's my civil partner now, for like 10 years or more. So I had to find this honky tonk recording studio, you know, like in way out Tampa in the sticks, you know, and go and do it in there. And it was like, and I was telling this guy what he had to do, and it was like, it was very like going back to like, you know, being a non-musician kind of thing, you know.
Really
like that. And you know, it was in a quite a difficult key, so I kind of like had to work my way around it, you know.
Amazing performance. Amazing.
I thought
this backing track sounded like a film soundtrack, and I thought that's what made it work. It really made you feel uneasy, you know.
Right.
And it should do it. I mean, the subject matter is pretty dark, frankly.
Yeah. When you said, because I remember at the time, I said, because I was confused about the title. Wasn't I something? I thought it meant something else.
You mean about the theory of the lyrics?
Yeah, or the title of the album.
Dark, yeah.
It was dark, yeah. I misinterpreted it somehow. I don't know how. But to me, the song Breathing was kind of like just this dystopian, horrible nightmare with this baby being born into a horrible place, you know. And
that's when we thought that nuclear war was the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Well,
it probably is. When we've gone somewhere since then.
How many years have we been at sea since then?
Oh my God.
Oh, I mean, we're still at sea. What are we going to do?
Oh my God, Andy, come on. We need to form a new political party and sort this bullshit out.
The alliance is so... What makes me sickest, Martin, it's just the same old tricks and shit over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And people just fall for it and fall for it and don't even look beyond their...
Narrow self-interest, yeah.
No.
But that's the genius of Thatcher, wasn't it? She divided society.
Well, yeah. Purposely.
Purposely, that's what I'm saying. I don't say she's a genius. I'm saying from her point of view, it was like the evil emperor, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's like number one in the ruler's guidebook, isn't it? In the leader's guidebook,
is it?
You know, how to take over the world or divide and
Divide and Conquer, yeah.
That's rule number one. I'm not sure what all the other rules are, but I'm sure that...
it probably is all the other rules rolled into one. Pop star to opera star, tell me about that.
Well, that was kind of embarrassing, but I just felt like Erasure were getting no exposure whatsoever.
Right.
So, it was my only... I mean, I'm not really a huge fan of reality television. Only sometimes I might get sucked in for a couple of episodes of something, you know. But really, I just thought, well, come on, you know, your voice is quite operatic, and this will be a really good experience for learning one-on-one with a professional opera singer, you know. And, you know, I took it really seriously. I really did.
I could tell.
And it was kind of more made because it was made for TV, you know. So I didn't get the tricks behind the whole campaign. Do you know what I mean?
And what were the tricks behind the whole campaign?
Well, because they always say to you, "Oh, can you say this? Like, this is the hardest thing that I've ever had to do in my life."
Oh, I see.
And those kind of things, you know. It's like you couldn't kind of be honest about things. And then you'd get somebody who would be your mentor, and they'd be as nice as pie to you just before.
And then they slag you off.
Yeah, and then when you go on, it'd be like, oh, you know. And so that's why in the end, and Erasure, we were on tour at the same time. So I was literally getting back on the train, like early in the morning, and coming all the way back to London for the show. You know what it's like being on tour. It's
exhausting. Yeah.
But my brain was just fried, and trying to learn Italian. I mean, you can probably speak it. But,
a little bit, yeah.
For me, you know, I love it, you know, for the language in the opera, but doing the Barbara of Seville.
No, that's super tough there.
You know, and it's like I can see why they picked that version for me for the comedic element, but the lyrics just went completely out of my head.
Is that the one that goes da 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 da? Oh, that's so tough in English. Let alone. Oh, that's so tough.
Yeah, so it was like there was no way in hell that I was going to...
No. Did you do... I mean, I thought you did really well, but that's incredibly tough. Did you do any Andrea Bocelli stuff?
I don't think so, no.
Is that what suited your voice?
Yeah. I haven't. No, not
la, 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 la. That one, yeah.
Yeah.
You know the one. So tell me about Torsten the Bareback Saint. And that's a one-man show, right?
It's all different things. It's like, they say it's a one-man show, but it's actually, when we have done a show, there have been four of us on stage, and with dancers. But it comes from the mind of a guy called Barney Ashton Bullock, who's like one of my good friends now. And we met at an awards ceremony for Daniel Miller, and because he worked for Cherry Red also, and has his own company, I think, called Strike Force Entertainment.
Oh yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, where he does reissues for, you know, bands that he likes, but he primarily, he's a poet, and I just loved his stuff. I just thought it was very. Like Berkoff.
Oh, you know? I like that stuff.
It was like Berkoff with a bit of a jerk off. It's like quite.
Was it rude?
It's very pornographic in places. Yeah, pornographic in places.
Do you get naked?
No, I don't get naked. I'm kind of dressed more like a duke or something on the. For the bareback scene. Not yet. We haven't. But it's quite filthy, which is why I like it as well. And that kind of reminds me of when Debbie Harry took the role in David Cronenberg's
Videodrome. Yeah.
So that's what it reminds me of, being in something like that. You know, that it's kind of like so off because I, you know, in Erasure you had this such this clean cut image kind of thing. Yeah. I thought anyway, you know.
I need to tell you something. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Well, you know, I mean, I have.
I still remember your arse being out. Don't worry.
Well, yeah, I have been voted to go back in the closet, like. a long time ago for being so boring, you know. So and I thought, well, you don't know me, you don't miss my life.
go back in the closet. I love that. That's funny.
So it was like in.
So, I've never heard that before.
So my hat went off to Barney, you know, because he said, oh, I've got this project that I thought you might be interested in. And I had heard the Peter Hamill's Fall of the House of Usher.
So I love Peter Hamill.
Montresor in. And so I just thought, why the hell not?
God, you know? But isn't it incredibly daunting doing a one-man show where you've got, it's all on you?
Well, it is. I mean, I have to say that we, for the last show, I had a prompter.
Oh, right.
Honestly, Martin, I don't know what it's like for you, but for me, learning words to speak is really, really hard. It's really, really difficult. You know? It doesn't matter how much you think that you forced them into your brain, you know, and read them over and over and over. It's like learning a book off by heart or something.
I couldn't do it.
And it kind of like, you know, for me, it kind of feels like it had gone in, but then they go around and they start taking chunks out and mixing things around. I'm just like, where am I? You know, trying to sing a song halfway through, you know, it's like,
oh my God.
Also you get that, and this is the reason why you do it, is to get that rabbit in the headlights feeling.
Oh, I hate
which
it.
Is horrible.
Oh, I hate it. I've had it, and it's horrible. Yeah. You know that thing where you're outside your body looking at yourself.
Yeah.
And you're going, really, what is he doing down there?
You have no idea where you are.
No.
It's just, you know, you're kind of just.
And then you start thinking, did I switch the washing machine off? Or, All sorts of weird things start popping into your head.
That happens, say, in rehearsal. You know, it's one thing when you're kind of like singing the songs as well. I found the minute you start thinking of your mind wanders and you start thinking of something else, like, oh, I wonder what if this dress will be okay for Emma or something. It goes. The lyric just goes.
Meanwhile, your mouth is still making sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know I've had that, and I don't sing leads, so Glenn's told me all about it. But I've never forgot You've Lost That Lovely Feeling yet when I do that duet.
Yeah,
that's all I have to remember. Thank God.
Give him my love, Glenn. I thought I will. I thought that version you did on it wasn't Jules Holland. It was something like on BBC4 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You did another version of Fascist Groove Thing.
Yes.
Like with a drum machine.
Yeah, it was good, isn't it? Yeah.
It was fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That's very kind of you. Yeah. Thank you. And you do a lot of remixing as well, don't you? Do you enjoy all that?
Yeah, I like doing that as well. That's
Do you find it easy?
I wouldn't say I find it easy, but I kind of feel like if I'm really into the person, like one of the last things I did was for Amanda Lear, who I really love.
Christ, that's going.
Yeah,
back,
yeah.
How is she now?
Honestly, she. You should look it up. The video for La Belle et la Bête, and it was for the Beauty and the Beast, her song, and it's her being caught on security cameras in this hotel, and she's on the bed, laying back with her holding the phone. Kind of like making love on this phone. You know, I did this version for her for this song, and I pretended to be the Beast, like in the Beauty and the Beast sort of thing. So I'm going, la bitch. and then her record company, I don't know who it was, if it's Carrere or whoever, but they loved it so much they were just saying, "Oh, Andy, can you do us another one?" Sort of thing. But I just thought, I think she's like must be in her 70s. I mean, nobody's. She's such an enigma. She won't tell anything about her life. You know, she's really? like a, It's a bit like Marlene Dietrich kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's all rumoured that
I'd like to be alone.
Yeah, and now she's a beautiful woman. And she was like Salvador Dali's muse, I think.
Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
And
yeah.
She didn't she go out with Bowie for a bit or something?
I'm sure he had.
I tell you who I've been talking to recently to try and persuade her to get... It was a very long shot to try and get her on the podcast, is Annette Peacock. Do you know Annette Peacock?
I don't know Annette.
You know, I'm the one, doom, doo, 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 I'm the one. It was covered by Mick Ronson on his first album.
Oh, yeah.
And she was the first woman to use electronic processing on her lead vocals.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just I tell you what. After we finished here, go to Spotify, type in Annette Peacock, and listen to the I'm the One album. You will love it. And that's 1973.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, I've been talking to her, and she's like nearly 80, and she looks like it really is. There's a painting in the attic that's like really old. She doesn't look real. And she's not had any work done or anything.
I love that.
God, I'm so jealous. Anyway. Where were we? So,
with remixing.
I'm looking at my notes. I'm not being rude. I'm just going, is there anything I've forgotten? Oh, have you got any funny touring stories? Just one, I'll do.
Funny touring stories. Well, I must say, one time we were in there's been a few times, I'd missed the sound check and they were like all really worried and stuff. And they came up to my room in the hotel with the, and it was all dark in the room.
And
they got the a hotel manager to come up and unlock the door because they were really scared in case something had happened to me or got murdered or something. So they came up and they opened the door and there was the hotel manager, Vince, our tour manager at the time, this female lady, and they came in, and I was in bed with this guy, right? And they switched the lights on, and I said, "Oh, hello! Oh, hi! This is Vince. This is and this is so and so. Like, and this is so and so. Oh, is it time for the show? I'll get you ready." And then one other time was. We came downstairs in the morning and it was in Dallas and the lift opened and I came out of the lift with these three like cowboys, like
probably
6 foot tall. And like Vince was saying, "Oh, I'm surprised you can still walk."
No.
And I'm like, you cheeky bee. It's why.
Your own personal Village People set.
Honestly, Martin, you know, I would kind of organise these things. You know what you like? You go to a bar, you get carried away.
Yeah.
And then I'd organise these things. And then usually when we get back, I would be like the one that was on the side, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's fine, but mostly, you know, it's just your bravado, isn't it? Your ego's through the roof. Listen,
you only live once. YOLO, YOLO.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know?
That's it, man. Speaking of which, I remember a funny story when you came up to Primrose Hill with Vince, and it was when they first started allowing absinthe. Remember that?
Sorry,
you remember absinthe, right, when it first came into the country?
Yeah.
And I managed to convince Vince and you to try the absinthe because it's a legendary drink, right?
Yeah.
At the Albert Pub in Primrose Hill. And we had one and we said, well, this isn't doing very much.
It was like the real stuff. It was the real
stuff. And then, like, we had another one and then the wheels came off. And you said, "I know, let's go to GAY. And we did. When it was at the Astoria, remember?
Yeah.
And I mean, I was flying.
Did they let us in?
They let us in. Yeah. And then after about an hour, I couldn't find you. And I kept circulating the club. I'm going, they've left me here. Not only could I not find you, I couldn't find the exit. In the end, I went into I went to a fire door and tried to open the fire door. Alarm went off.
No.
The bouncer came. The bouncer came, put my arm up my back, and I thanked him. Oh God! I had no idea how I got home that night. Anyway, I think there might have been some other substances involved. I can't remember.
The good old days. Huh?
Good old days when we weren't half dead.
No.
But anyway, wow. That's one of the mildest stories. But anyway.
That is very mild.
Okay, we're going to do nearing the end of our beautiful chat.
That was really quick, that was.
I know, it goes so quick, doesn't it, when you're having fun?
Yeah.
So I do this Smash Hits thing, which is where I ask everybody the same questions, like, what's your favourite X? So, what's your favourite book?
My favourite book? I have to say... is The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Oh, yeah, it's a great book.
I like it. Ever since I was a kid, I like it. Because it's so, like, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Favourite film?
My favourite film, I think that has to be the black and white Jean Cocteau version of Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
It's all that kind of shimmering light and... God, I've watched that about 20 times, I think.
Fantastic. And all the backward stuff, and it's all in white and so beautiful and soft lit. It's
I prefer black and white anyway.
Personally. Yeah, I do. I do.
Anyway. Really do. Favourite TV show, present, past, box set, anything you want?
Favourite TV show? I don't know. I have to say Charlie's Angels. I know that's so. I know that's kind of
the original, though.
Yeah, the original one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wanted to be Farah, you know, when I was.
Did you?
Yeah, Farah, and I used to make the noise of the Bionic Woman, you know, jumping off the high diving. And saying, "Oh, it's all right. They can just film it backwards and
in slow motion."
Make me look like look.
Favourite visual artist or conceptual artist?
Oh dear, my favourite visual artist. Oh, I don't know that one. I don't know. I don't know, Martin. I'm not savvy enough.
That's all right. Don't worry. No, it's fine. We all love so many different musical artists, but which other musical artist or composer?
What that I like?
Yeah, your favourite or one.
Well, apart from Kate Bush, it's got to be Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's incredible. You know, and
it's still incredible. Yeah.
Very hard. It's very hard when you associate someone so much with somebody, like with Paul, you know, that it kind of it just my heart to even listen to anything. But how incredible, though.
Oh, but, I mean, amazing, just an amazing songwriter, full of passion and soul, but the melodies and the chord structures and here's a good one. An epiphanal moment, like a moment that changed you, direction. You know,
I would say I was living in Hastings, and I wasn't very happy. And I walked into a tarot shop, and there was this old lady in there. She didn't know me from Adam, I swear. And she started getting these cards out, and she went into a trance. She was laying them down, and she said. Oh, she said, who's this boy? This man, he's all sleeping all the time. This is when Paul was poorly, you know. She goes, you have your brother, Gary. She said, you're like chalk and cheese, you know. And she said, and she just knew all these things. She said, oh, you need to be on the stage. You don't want to be at home washing up and doing housework. You need to be on stage. You're going to go to New York, you know. Right. And it's like, I packed my things the very next day.
Did you?
And left and came back to London, yeah.
Wow.
I was kind of going to give up in the music.
No.
Yeah.
When was this?
This was probably about 2005.
You could never give up music, don't you?
I know I couldn't, Martin. It's just, I had to kind of go through that, you know, because to realise it, but because I couldn't, even when I was down there, and we were still doing stuff, I was doing stuff down there.
I think the thing is that people, a really valuable lesson that I've learned throughout all these podcasts is that there is no exception. Everybody goes through absolutely terrible, terrible, terrible times.
Yeah.
And you have to...
That's it.
People don't come through them. You know, yeah, we'll probably be talking to them if they didn't. But, yeah. You know, but to know that everybody who you look up to or stars or whatever they are, it's like in every dream, Omar Heartache, isn't it? Rocks and
music. Yeah. It's the human.
We're still here, though, aren't we?
La condition humaine.
The
sound up on air always does that. Let me just turn it down, Martin, just for the last minute, last couple of minutes.
All right.
That's it. Oh. It turns itself back up. You know, it's not...
What about theatre? Have you got any favourite theatre shows?
I don't know.
Really. I've never asked this question before, but it's just struck me then.
No. Well, I do like plays. I love plays. And we did, went to see one time a play called The Goat. I don't know if you've read it, but it's about this guy who literally, he falls in love with a goat in Greece, you know? And it's about just the family reaction and stuff. And it was starring Jonathan Pryce, and directed by his wife. And it was like in Islington, in one of those.
The Almeida, yes. No, not the Almeida.
I think it was the Almeida.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And it was just like, I was just like, wow, you know, because I knew he could act, but he was like right next door in Highgate, and you know, him and Paul were really good friends. And it's kind of like, it was just like, blew you away. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, God.
I really quite like those intimate kind of theatrical experiences.
Yeah.
They have such a, if they're done properly, such a power to affect you.
You're kind of there. It's like you're in the ring with the...
That's right. Yeah. That's right. There's a commonality. Okay. Yeah. Unfulfilled ambition.
Unfulfilled ambition? I don't know. I mean, you kind of... You know,
film star.
To be a film star, I want to be one of those cinema, what are they called? Heartthrobs.
Yes. And you do look like it. I think you look more handsome now than you've ever looked.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm not telling fibs. It's true.
I'm growing into myself. Which
you
is
look
kind
really
of...
cool, man. It looks great.
Thank you.
Okay, and final question.
Yeah.
Your favourite synth?
My favourite synth is one that I don't have, but I would have to say the Oberheim Expander.
Interesting. You're the first person to say that in 70 episodes.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's amazing. Until about 10 episodes ago, no two people had said the same synth.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? You think like there'd be 10 of them say the Mini Moog or something.
Or the Syrinx.
Or the Syrinx or the, you know, Synclavier or whatever. Everybody. And what it goes to show is that synthesizers are like an indication of the personality, what your favorites are.
Yeah. I mean, they're amazing. They're like, I mean, it's almost like now synths are infinite too.
Ooh. On that bombshell. On that bombshell, what an absolute delight it is. Even if I've not recorded this, it's just a delight anyway. And I'm going to put this out as soon as I can humanly put it out, because people are going to love it.
Lovely.
All right, Andy, listen, where are you currently anyway? Are you in London?
I'm in Limehouse. Yeah.
Right. Limehouse.
All I'm right. In Limehouse, yeah.
All right, cool. Is that your permanent residence now?
Yeah, it is. My partner lives in Miami, so we go back and forwards all right. the time. Right. We have our little baby who's nearly 90 now, a Doberman called Angel Baby. He's so sweet. Honestly, he's so sweet. We have to now we have to help him on the couch with his back legs because he's
a bit
wobbly, you know.
But is that in Miami? Yeah.
Oh, it breaks my heart.
Oh. So are you all on your own in London then?
I'm on my own. Yeah, for now. But we've got all the teams together because we're rehearsing. So and then Steve came over. A couple of weeks ago, and then also I managed to get into the US via Mexico about 5 weeks before that, so we've seen quite a bit.
Oh, okay. They've just changed the rules today, haven't they? They're gonna
I saw it. And can you get a flight?
No, right,
you can't get one.
Listen, I wanted to go away for the weekend with my friend just because I've not seen him for ages in Brighton.
Yeah.
The price of the hotels, there was a backpacker hotel that was £520 a night. I'm going, what? No, you could get a flight to India for that, you know? No, not doing it. No.
It's like, I mean, the world is crazy.
It is. But we're still happy and being creative. And what a pleasure. Andy, thank you for doing this, and I will see you, hopefully, very soon. When does the tour start again?
I think it's October the 3rd in Glasgow.
Right. I'm going to give you a shout, because I'd like to come and see you, obviously, at some point.
Great.
And we're on tour in November, so I'm hoping we're not going to clash.
Oh, we might just. Wow, yeah.
It'd be typical, wouldn't it? Well, all right, man. Love you.
Hey, thank you, sir.
Love you. See you later.
Bye. Love you too, Martin. Bye.
Andy Bell, what about that then? He's quite a character, isn't he? And you know what I really love about him is the fact he's kept down to earth. He still hangs out constantly and cares for his family. He never distances himself from his friends and acquaintances. He's a solid... I'd like to think I come into this category. He's a solid salt of the earth type from a working class background. He grew up in a council house, as did I in Sheffield. His was in Peterborough. And I'm pretty sure that gives you a realistic grasp on the world, much more so than growing up in the kind of more rarefied atmosphere that we occupy nowadays. But I never forget, in the words of Aretha Franklin, never forget the bridge that brought you over. And I try not to, and I'm certain that Andy is of that ilk. He's very, very loved in the world of the music business in the UK and worldwide, I suppose. And some of my most proud moments as a producer have come working with his immense talent. I mean, he's such a great singer. He could do anything he put his mind to, I'm pretty sure. So there you go. How is everybody coping? Things are very slowly getting back to normal. Nothing will ever get back to normal in this country with this god-awful government in power. But the opposition has been commandeered by fifth columnists, and so therefore we are in a lot of trouble. The UK is in a lot of trouble. And the temptation is to go, oh, well, we've just got to make the best of it. There's nothing much we can do. I would suggest that there is stuff that one can do. Keep protesting, keep letting your feelings be known. Don't bury them because it's too painful to look in the mirror. and look in the mirror of society, I suggest, like Andy, that we need to be brave and stand up for what we know to be right. I certainly will. I hope you will. This isn't anything to do with being left, right or centre. It's just being human and empathetic and caring for your fellow girls, boys, women, men, whatever. I've just heard the incredibly sad news of the death of Richard H. Kirk, one of my best friends from the early days of my electronic music career in Sheffield as a member of Cabaret Voltaire, together with Mal and Chris. They all looked after us, really. They were all our mentors and very close friends. We used to share parties together. We used to go to each other's rehearsal studios. We used to go to each other's gigs. We used to laugh a lot. And, of course, when I moved down to London in 81, I didn't spend as much time with him because he never left Sheffield. He and his wife, Lynn, were both lovely people. Later on, in the mid-90s, I reconnected with him in Sheffield, spent some time together and said, you know, you must come and stay in my apartment in Venice. And he really enjoyed that. He kind of regrets never having got out of Sheffield. I think he felt a bit like he'd missed the boat in some respects. And I said, well, no, you'd been very creative and everything, but stop releasing so many albums. He used to release an album every you know, year or 6 months sometimes in that period. And I said, you know, you've got to create a sense of rarity about what you're doing, you know, or else you just become like another copy of the newspapers being delivered. Anyway, I loved his stuff. He was really, I suppose, there were three unique characters in Cabaret Voltaire, but Richard was kind of strange because he wasn't the lead singer. He wasn't the mysterious one like Chris was. He was the kind of driving energy, I used to think, behind the whole thing. And we are much poorer for his loss. I remember when I reconnected with him and he went to stay in my apartment in Venice with Lynn. It really cheered him up for a long while. I think I don't know, I don't want to say, but I think maybe he suffered with depression from time to time. But, and I remember one thing stuck in my mind that he said to me. There was some documentary that I thought he should be on, which I spoke on and on the telly, and he said, Martin, I'm waiting for the South Bank Show episode for Cabaret Voltaire. And I thought to myself, to be honest, it may or may not happen. You know, you've got to grab your opportunities to publicise yourself when you can. And I'm hoping now, in retrospect, that somebody does do a documentary about the Cabs, and especially Richard, to pay tribute to the influence that they had on a lot of people around in Sheffield at the time, and internationally as well. The condolences and sadness are genuine and pouring in from all over the world. I literally heard about it an hour ago. So it's very fresh. I'm meeting my friend Paul Bauer later today, and we're going to raise a toast to him. And we'll probably share stories. And if there's any good ones or funny ones, I'll share those with you next time. But for now, it's a very sad day. And I'd love you all to go to your chosen platform and listen to many of his works. He's a really talented guy. R.I.P. Richard H. Kirk. Here's a little tribute from Paul Bauer, my good friend, who used to hang out with me and Richard Kirk, and it's about a gig that we did at the Limit Club in Sheffield where we were on the same bill. It's very funny.
My name's Paul Bauer, and in 1978, I edited a fanzine called Gunrubber, and my name was Ronnie Clarks. We were always really impressed by Cabaret Voltaire and their pure punk attitude, even though they weren't actually playing punk music. It was their absolute fearlessness that appealed to all of us, and particularly Richard. My fondest memory of Richard is when Cabaret Voltaire were playing a gig down at the Limit Club on West Street. And they were on the same bill on a local band's night with Def Leppard, yes, Def Leppard, the Human League, and a band called Molodoy. Molodoy dressed as Clockwork Orange droogs and had an intimidating following, an intimidating violent following. And just before the doors opened, I remember Richard smiling at me and explaining that in case there was any trouble and any of the Molodoy fans got annoyed with them and tried to invade the stage and damage Cabaret Voltaire's equipment, he had a plan to repel them. And at that point, he produced a crowbar from underneath one of his keyboards and just gave me a big smile. Well, the gig went ahead and Richard stood at the lip of the stage and unleashing a wall of sound from his guitar, just grinning at the assembled Molodoy fans, all dressed as droogs. That was Richard, all the time, unintimidated by these fans and unintimidated by life, always exploring, always creating new things. Thanks for everything, Richard.
That's it. Looking forward to bringing you... Oh, yeah, don't forget a couple of things. One is still sponsored by the very generous SJM Concerts, who are also our live promoters, largely. Thank you very much for that. It's enabling this to continue. And don't forget, as an individual, if you'd like to help... Because, I mean, they're SJM sponsors, but it still doesn't cover the costs of what I'm doing, basically. So if you'd like to contribute in a small way to helping us do the thing by carrying on forever, or as long as I can, for the cost of a coffee or a pint every month, you can become a buddy and, you know, have... great contact, exclusive episodes. I will respond to all your emails. There will be competitions with prizes. Yippee! And all that stuff. So that's basically it. So if you want to do that, that's Patreon, patreon.com/electronicallyhours, all one word. And you can see what the deal is there. I'd love to have you on board. Thank you for that, and I will see you next week. Bye! Thank you.